Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to the Tennis Podcast. It's sort of midweek edition time because it's a combined Masters 1000. That's what we do at these events. We give you two podcasts in a week. So, you're welcome. We have Catherine Whittaker, who is in Madrid. We've got Matt Roberts and myself, who are very much not. It is obviously very late at night because that's what tennis does. And tennis is happening. Of course it is. Catherine is back in her hotel room. After a couple of days in Madrid. And I know it's not your very favourite venue, Catherine, but blimmin' heck, the tennis has been all right.
It has, yeah. I think the quality of the tennis has been extremely high. Look, there are lots of things I really like about this tournament. It's just so aesthetically ugly. And that is something that you can't really change, and it's such a shame because so many of the other things are brilliant. It's just, you know, you can't close your eyes and watch tennis. But look, we all know that the magic box / cheese grater / aircraft hanger / inexplicable crate type thing is an acquired taste. There's no need for me to harp on that any more than I just have for the last minute and a half. They've put some flowers in and around to cozy it up a bit. It's aesthetically displeasing, but in other respects, very pleasing.
Okay. Well put. I always think of them as the Carlos Alcaraz flowers because they're the ones that he always tries to put opponents in when he tries to do that standing out wide position kick serve to the backhand, Matt. That thing, I mean, it's nigh on unreturnable.
Yeah, and it's becoming a trademark of his, and it's especially effective in Madrid, isn't it? I remember last year seeing it, and he was doing it to Novak Djokovic, of all people, who was struggling to return that serve. I did quite enjoy Laura Robson on commentary the other day slagging off the flowers, maybe not so much the flowers, but the fact that they're right in the view of the people who sort of have the best seats in the house. So even if you've got the best seats, you've sort of got a flower pot in front of you and a sort of obstructed view from row one.
Laura, they're the only things that aren't grey. Save the flowers, please.
I love it. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about all the tennis that has taken place in the last 3 days since we last spoke to you. I was slightly worried that we wouldn't have much to talk about. And then 3 days in the tennis world go by and we've actually started to delete things from the running order and save them for Monday's show. It's that kind of sport, folks, but at least it gives us plenty to talk about. Before we get into it all, I want to remind you that we are sponsored by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. On Location provides packages via Steve Fergal's international tennis tours to all four of the Grand Slam tournaments, including the US Open, which is on sale now with some fantastic tickets to watch the action from the year's final Grand Slam tournament at Flushing Meadows in New York. You can get a hospitality package that'll help you really lap it all up in style. You can sit in a lounge or a rooftop bar in between matches and enjoy all-inclusive food and drinks. You can. I'm telling you. And Catherine, we have a 5% discount for Tennis Podcast listeners for the US Open. How about that?
I'm a real sucker for a rooftop bar. Where are they?
Well,
let's go there.
I'll show you when we get there. Okay, how about that?
Yeah, deal.
I'll get on location to give us a guided tour.
Yep.
So anyway, if you'd like to join Catherine in a rooftop bar, no promises, just in theory, but you know, might happen. We have a 5% discount for you. You just need to go to toursfortennis.com/podcast. That's toursfortennis.com/podcast. Click the US Open discount section and enter the code Final Slam. It's not the Final Slam ever, it's just the Final Slam of the year. The code is Final Slam to get yourself a 5% discount off your ticket and hospitality package. The coupon code Final Slam works when you purchase eligible 2023 US Open ticket and hospitality packages in between May the 4th, 2023, that's today, at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and May the 31st, 2023, at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. You can only use the code once. It can't be used with other discounts or previous purchases. You'll see your savings when you add an eligible package to your cart and use the code at the checkout. This offer does not apply to hotel packages or other events from Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours or on location and its subsidiaries. If you have any questions, email info@toursfortennis.com. See onlocationexp.com's purchase policy for more information. Right, Catherine, I've done my disclaimer.
I was going to do a little sing-song there, but I lost confidence in it. I was going to do a getaway car rejig with rooftop bar instead of motel bar. Matt knows what I'm talking about, but I've lost confidence in it. If you know, you know. You don't need me to sing it.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Marvellous. Right. Let's get on with talking about the tennis. The moment we've got Iga Świątek on the court, just finishing things up against Veronika Kudermetova. She certainly won the first set 6-1. I'm not sure what's going on in the second set.
2-1 with a break. She doesn't lose more than one game in a set against Kudermetova. Those seem to be the rules for poor old Veronika.
Kudermetova won the coin toss, and it's all been downhill from there.
And it's not even a coin toss, Matt. Not even a coin toss.
No, it's one of those electronic things, isn't it? Which I saw your eye roll the other day on TV, Catherine.
I do it every time. Poor old Stefanos Tsitsipas earlier at the coin toss, he looked on the ground for an actual coin, bless him. I mean, this was a quarter final. I feel like he should know by now. But very relatable, Stefanos.
Oh, that is amazing. That is amazing. Catherine has a massive beer in hand at the moment. What we're drinking, Catherine?
Well, it was massive 10 minutes ago. Yes, I'm following the Veronika Kudermetova method of recovery, which is to drink a big Spanish beer, and it's very lovely, very very lovely. Una cerveza. That is part of my limited Spanish vocabulary, and I lost confidence in that as I was saying it as well. Look, it's been a long day. All right, I don't need feedback on my Spanish.
I mean, it's okay in my eyes, Catherine. I thought you did a splendid job, but then I can't even say that. So what do you think, Matt?
Listen, I am actually not a language snob, and Catherine has a beer in hand, so clearly it worked. That is...
Thank you very much, Matt. Okay.
That is how it goes.
I am a language slob. I like the thought of that. So magnificent. Anyway, we better start talking about the tennis or people are just going to be tuning out in their droves. Basically, Iga Świątek is flying towards a final meeting with Aryna Sabalenka. That's how things look. And I mean, this really is starting to feel like a rivalry now. I'm quite happy to just go on record straight away. If you both reach the Stuttgart final and you've been winning Grand Slams between you over the last 12 months and it's happening a lot, and then you get into another final of this magnitude in, well, back-to-back tournaments, that's a rivalry. This is a rivalry. It's happening. Is it going to be good? That's the question. Is it going to feel like Sabalenka is in there properly with a chance to win this thing? I mean, I think you two have picked her, haven't you?
I did pick Sabalenka from the start. That was slightly, perhaps, on the thinking that maybe Świątek wouldn't make it all the way to the final, as we spoke about before. Elena Rybakina going out of that section, sort of threw things open there. But, you know, Świątek was quite capable of getting through that draw anyway. I just think the conditions here are really suited to Sabalenka. It's like her massive shots anyway have just extra on them. And if she's going to do damage against Świątek on clay, I feel like it will be in Madrid. So I'm absolutely fascinated to see it. And I completely agree with you. It is sounding like a rivalry. And I think a big reason for that is because of something Sabalenka said to Catherine today on the Prime coverage, in that she wants to face Iga Świątek. I think we always ask tennis players that question with a little bit of trepidation, because you don't know whether they will commit to an answer. But when they do, it's great, and you get a real insight into what they're thinking. And Catherine, you asked Sabalenka who she wants to win out of tonight's semi-final between Świątek and Gudmatova, and she said she wants to play Świątek, she wants revenge, and I think we all just fist pumped or celebrated however we could. Catherine, you were on air, you couldn't quite do a wild celebration, but it was very clear how pleased you were with that answer, and I think it's great to see.
I feel like that was the moment the rivalry happened. It ceased to be us trying to make the rivalry happen, and that was the moment it was cemented. And I know, you know, I'm wary of I'm wary of overhyping or going too soon on the rivalry, but I just loved that answer so much from Sabalenka. And I think she, you know, like I think we were saying this on Monday, weren't we, she knows that this is her chance, this is her best chance on clay to beat Świątek. Because of the altitude, she feels like this is her backyard here. And I think she feels like beating her here on clay would then give her confidence to beat her elsewhere on clay, for example, at Roland Garros. I mean, Rome as well, but obviously Roland Garros is the big one. I mean, they both seem to be completely on a mission, but in two completely different ways. Sabalenka is, without doubt, dialed in, hungry, in her own words, by her own admission, desperate for revenge against Iga Świątek and to prove a point against her. And Iga Świątek is as focused and intense as I've ever seen her. Honestly, I watched her in practice warming up ahead of this match, this demolition job that we appear to be watching right now, ahead of the night session tonight. Watched her in practice with her coach Thomas Witorowski against a hitting partner, apparently quite a well-known hitting partner that travels quite a lot on the tour, not specifically with Iga Świątek, but for WTA players. And he looked quite stressed, actually, because it was such an intense practice. You know, his instructions were extremely clear, and there was definitely the feeling that if he messed up or didn't do a drill correctly, he'd be in trouble. You know, this wasn't a shrug it off and make a joke type practice. There it was zero laughs out there. Honestly, this was a pre-match practice ahead of facing an opponent that she beat love and won the last time they faced one another, and that she beat, I think, 1-1 or 2-love, that lost two games the time before that they faced one another. You know, a complete mismatch of a head-to-head. And yet it was quite fearsome, actually. It was kind of Steffi Graf-like, dare I say. She's even started wearing the ankle socks, which always makes me think of Steffi Graf. I know that's just because it was the 90s, and everybody had those socks in the 90s before trainer socks became a thing. But champions find something to motivate them, don't they? They achieve a goal, and then you've got to find the next goal to stay hungry. And Madrid feels like a real goal for her. It's a big clay court tournament that she not only has she never won before, she'd never reached a quarter final before this week. She is ravenous for it, and it's sorry, Veronika Kudermetova, maybe you're about to mount the comeback of all comebacks, but I'm salivating for Saturday's final.
Yeah. They both want a rivalry. Actually, I've got another question for you, Catherine. When you asked that question, it's a question, as Matt said, you and I have both asked many times in those sort of positions, because it's an obvious thing to ask and it's the right thing to ask. But when you went into it, were you expecting her to answer like that?
Yeah, I always do with athletes, quite frankly. Maybe with the odd exception, maybe Medvedev, I would ask that question sort of expecting to get a genuine, honest answer, but maybe a Dan Evans or something.
It was a surprise.
Pretty much all athletes, I would expect a sort of slightly brainwashed answer to, and I don't judge them for it at all. You know, anything you give away is a gift to your opponent, but I actually don't think that. I mean, if I were Iga Świątek doesn't give two hoots about what Aryna Sabalenka thinks. She looks so in the zone and in the bubble to me that I don't think she's even noticing who her opponents are. But yeah, it sent a real message, I think. I really loved it. I wasn't sure. You know, usually you get told with those interviews three questions, but her answer to the first question was quite short, not in a sort of rude way, just in as she said what she had to say, and that was that. And I thought, you know, nobody was giving us the wrap-up signal, so I thought, I'll push my luck a bit here. I knew it was her birthday tomorrow, so I thought I'll ask about that, how she plans to celebrate, and she really lit up in response to that. So I thought, oh well, you know, one more question, I'll toss her this one just to wrap up. And then she gave that answer, and it was a really great moment. And it was her validating my desperation to make a rivalry happen, so much appreciated, Aryna.
Well, if you look at the players they've beaten, we've had Sabalenka last night backing up the win she had over Maya Sharif. She won against Maria Sakkari earlier on today. And then we've had Świątek now having beaten Ekaterina Alexandrova in three really good sets, actually. That was her most competitive match of the week, wasn't it, Matt? And then Petra Martic very easily.
Yeah, and actually, as impressive as the Iga Świątek demolition jobs are, I actually sort of go to the three-set win as probably the most noteworthy, the most impressive of the tournament so far, just because that's been missing this season. You know, we know that Świątek, when she's at her best, can just kind of swap players aside and beat them easily. But I was quite impressed with that win against Alexandrova, because she wasn't at her best and she was up against it right from the start. Alexandrova is a player who likes these conditions, hits the ball very flat, very hard, played well in Madrid last year. It was a tricky contest for Świątek there, but... And she sort of let it go a bit in the second set. She probably should have won it in straight sets, but then she recovered and found her game again. So just thought there were a lot of good signs there. I mean, it was only a couple of weeks ago that she hadn't even played a three-set match this year. She's now had a couple on the clay, in one in Stuttgart, one here. And I just think that's all helping to build the resistance. And she's going to need it, I think, if she reaches the final, which it looks like she will do against Sabalenka, because... You know, in these conditions, Sabalenka can really, really test her. So, yeah, I think it's been a pretty perfect tournament for both players, really, so far.
Does strike me as well, with this match on the horizon, that Alexandrova, I don't think Sabalenka needs anybody to give her hope as such, but if anybody was going to, maybe that might, because Alexandrova is a big, flat, powerful, darting hitter, isn't she, who goes after the ball. I mean, she got to bring out some of the Swiatek defence into attack, which I love to watch from Iga. But there is a blueprint really there, particularly on this court. I don't know whether it would work at Roland Garros or Rome.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's definitely the blueprint. To an extent, it's the blueprint on any court, see Elena Rybakina, but even more so, it's the blueprint on this court. I think the other blueprint is to try and get her out of that zone, fluster her in some way. She seems so ordered and intense this week and just in a bubble. Not for the first time by any means, but it's really striking. I just think knock her off axis a bit and it could almost be a bit disorienting for her. You know, like that, I know she has won 3-set matches now, but, you know, like that record of not having played or won a 3-set match all year up until a couple of weeks ago, you know, she's used to having it all her own way and it all being in her comfort zone. I think Sabalenka's just got to be a bit of a disruptor out there with Iga Świątek. Arina Sabalenka is better at going with the flow and accepting knockbacks on the court than Iga Świątek is. Sabalenka is getting a little bit more Kvitova-like in accepting the pitfalls of her own game, you know, putting the disappointments and the highs and lows behind her. I think that could be interesting. You know, she can get into Iga Świątek's head a little bit. And the last time they met in the Stuttgart final, it was tense. You know, we're still a bit unsure as to why, whether it might have just been an on the day thing, could be something to do with the war in Ukraine. We honestly don't know, but it was tense. There was a little bit of spice in there. So, give me more of that, please.
Yeah.
Give me more of
it. Can't wait. That's a fantastic prospect. Okay, well, we'll look forward to that if it ends up happening. I should say that Veronika Kudermetova and soon to be out of date tennis news has two break points. So this will all be irrelevant. You watch when the comeback starts. What about the men? It's very easy to immediately have a look over at what Carlos Alcaraz is doing, because I so often think of Alcaraz and Świątek in the same breath in many ways. They seem to be coming along and doing very similar things in their draws quite a lot of the time. Obviously, Świątek's done a lot more at this point, but Alcaraz is similarly reliable on clay and similarly dominant in so many ways at the moment. I mean, he absolutely thrashed Alexander Zverev, the loss of just three games the other day. Much closer match against Karen Khachanov earlier on today, who has been in very good form. He got a good win over Andrei Rublev and actually pushed him to a 7-5 second set. He was leading that set as well, was Khachanov as well. But Alcaraz is into the semis. He's playing against Borna Coric, who's got a mullet. That took me by surprise underneath his cap. I wasn't expecting to see a Borna Coric mullet. And I wasn't really expecting to see Borna Coric playing the level of tennis he's playing just at the moment, Matt. I mean, he played Alejandro Davidovich Fokina the other day in a match I missed, but which I think was a thriller from everything I've heard. Then he beat Daniel Altmaier very straightforwardly, did Coric last night. He doesn't get many headlines. He doesn't get many sort of Twitter mentions, I don't think, Borna Coric. But my word, he does turn up now and again.
Yeah, and I think emphasis on now and again is probably true. And I thought he was going to have quite a big year this year. I felt like he was playing really good tennis at the back end of last season. But I do remember something he said to me in the press conference at the Davis Cup last year, just related to how much work he has to put into his shoulder still to get himself ready, you know, to play matches. And I think sometimes it's about tolerating that and being in the right mindset to be able to cope with that on a week-to-week basis. And I think there's still a little bit of pain that he's in on court. He's not, I don't think he's ever going to be fully pain-free. I know that tennis players generally often play with pain and with niggles, but it was a pretty severe thing that he went through. And so perhaps that is just who Čorić is now. He's going to have these, you know, stretches where we don't see him that much, and then he's going to come alive. And he did that last year winning Cincinnati, and he's done it again this year in Madrid. And, you know, the match against Davidovich-Fokina was fantastic. It came down to basically a dead net cord, kind of decided the whole thing. It gave Čorić a match point, and there was just nothing between the two players. It was a fantastic, high-quality match. And he's very capable of having these results. He's got a brilliant backhand. His serve has improved. He competes so well. His forehand is dodgy. It's definitely the wing that can break down. But I think he can be a bit of a pest for Alcaraz when they play. I think he can sort of go toe to toe with him a little bit with the movement and try and get backhand to backhand rallies. I think that match will be closer than a lot of Alcaraz matches, I suppose. But it's just so hard to imagine anyone stopping the force that is Alcaraz at the moment. I was blown away by. I was blown away by his confidence and his commitment to his game style, I suppose, against Khachanov, because it wasn't necessarily working all the time. And I find it so interesting in sport, that line about, you know, stubbornness. Is it a positive or is it a negative? And I just think Alcaraz has got it just right, because he trusts himself. It's belief, and he doesn't give up playing the way he's playing if it's going wrong. He doesn't abandon it, and yet it doesn't just feel like he's doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different result. There's a trust there about what he does. And again, he said a line afterwards saying that, I think it was to you, Catherine, he wants to play different tennis. He wants to be fun. He wants to, you know, make people smile. And a sort of smile came across his face as well. And I think that combination of trust in his own game, and also this idea of it sort of kind of being a performance, especially in front of the, you know, the Spanish crowd, just makes him completely irresistible. And I think especially at this tournament. So as well as Čorić is playing, and as I've tried to build a case there to make that an interesting match, it just feels like Alcaraz is on a different level.
Hmm. Well, I think he is on a different level. You've actually touched on something that I took away from his match against Khachanov probably more than anything else, is the smile after one of his mind-bending retrievals and point victories, where he smiles in a way, he not only has he enjoyed it, but he is showing off. He is looking up at the crowd and looking up to his coach, and he's saying, did you see that? Did you see what I can do? It's amazing, isn't it? And I mean, it is just totally infectious, and I can't get enough of it.
He can't get enough of it, David.
No.
Well, that's,
he can't.
That's the beauty of it, isn't it?
I mean, when you're that level, you're court side, Catherine, you're doing a lot of your links literally from the ground, just over the other side of the advertising board from these players. What is it like to watch him do his stuff from that vantage point? I mean, is it even more spectacular than what we see on TV?
When it's on, yes, absolutely. Look, when I think of Carlos Alcaraz, I still think of watching him from that position here last year, beating Djokovic and beating Nadal. Those are the matches that I think of. Those were the moments that I just reassessed where he was in my brain in terms of brilliance and what I'd witnessed up to that point with my own eyes. I, that that feeling is what I think of when I think of Carlos Alcaraz. The only match of his that I've watched parts of from that position this year is his one yesterday against Khachanov, and it just wasn't that type of match. It was a slightly weird match. The conditions in it changed completely in the second set, and Alcaraz was quite thrown by it, and Khachanov was very much on top of that second set for quite a spell there, and it was very impressive problem solving from Alcaraz to turn it around, which I think is a real feather in his cap. He's done winning in lots of different ways this week. He's had that match against Rui Savori where he was terrible, really, by his own standards for a set and a half, turned that around. He's had the absolutely sublime against Zverev where it was just perfection. How much of that was down to Zverev? I don't know. That's a good matchup for Alcaraz, and Zverev didn't offer much resistance. But even so, Alcaraz was foot perfect. And then the Khachanov match, which was kind of a mixture of the two. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey. Kind of a perfect journey actually for Alcaraz, because that's the next progression for him, isn't it? To win when he's playing badly and to problem solve mid-match and just not to have to rock up and be 10 out of 10 brilliant every day. So I think it's been a great tournament for him so far. I don't feel quite as optimistic as Matt about Djokovic's chances. But hey, it's sport. Right? I didn't feel that optimistic about Emil Rui Savori's chances. And there he was in a winning position. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, we needn't worry for the rivalry in the women's final, because the comeback is over and Veronika Kudermetova has been beaten by two breadsticks, which have inserted themselves into Iga's bakery. And she is through to face Aryna Sabalenka, 6-1, 6-1.
Yes. Sorry, now, could have been over, but... Look, we all want it, don't we? We want it.
You're the only one, Veronica, who doesn't want it, all right? if we thought Borna Coric was a little bit of a surprising name to have in the semi-finals in Madrid, how many of you had Jan-Lennard Struff against Aslan Karatsev as your semi-final?
Well, I don't think anybody had it after Jan-Lennard Struff lost to Aslan Karatsev in qualifying. If you picked it then wow.
You're a genius.
Don't ever enter our predictions competitions. Look, I know it has happened before that... a player will lose to somebody in qualifying, come in as a lucky loser and end up playing them in the main draw of the tournament, you know, because of how the draw falls. I don't know if it's ever happened that they've ended up playing them in the semi-finals of that tournament. Mm. Matt's potentially doing a face that indicates he knows the answer to this and is about to ruin my speculative stat. Over to you, Matt.
Well, listen, I've had time on my hands.
Oh, God. Why did you let me start down that road, Matt?
Well, great. It's not a fully formed stat, but I did find Canberra 2005 WTA event, Melinda
Sink,
lost to Anna Ivanovic in the final round of qualifying. And then they met again in the final of the main draw, and Anna Ivanovic won both of those matches. So that is one example, but I don't know whether it's happened at this level before on the men's side. But you know, there's a slither of a precedent, but it is incredibly rare.
We might have reached peak Matt Roberts.
That was amazing, and actually. The whole story is amazing. That whole section of the draw has been amazing. You know, we'll get on to Zheng Jijian in a minute as well, because he's had some incredible results and ended up losing to Karatsev. But these two, just in terms of their sheer quality of tennis that I've seen this week, I mean, we can talk as much as we like about Alcaraz, but I expect that. I've seen a lot of these two, and I've seen some spectacular tennis, particularly from Karatsev over the time. But I haven't seen anybody play better than these two during this tournament. When I think of the tennis that Karatsev put up to knock out Daniil Medvedev a couple of days ago, I mean, I compared it to like watching Andre Agassi hit the tennis ball, and I can think of few bigger compliments than that in terms of just the wind up, the flourishing follow through, the how early he's taking the ball, and the sheer crispness of the ball strike. I mean, he is a gorgeous ball striker. I think as clean as anybody in the sport, and I mean, it does make me wonder how on earth he had a record last year of 17 matches won and 29 lost. I mean, this is kind of who he's been. If you think back to 2019, he was ranked 480 in the world. 2 years later, he was ranked 14 in the world. Now he's down at 121 in the world. You know, it has been that kind of journey. But when you watch him play like he's playing at the moment, it's just baffling to think that he was struggling to that degree. I mean, Matt and I were talking about it earlier today, Catherine, while we were just sort of testing a few things with our microphones and all this. Our conclusion was maybe sometimes he just can't be bothered, really, to sort of put it in. I don't know. What's your sense?
Well, look, his calves have been the same size all the way through, whether he's winning or losing. Like, he's doing the calf exercises in the gym come what may, from what I can gather. Look, don't ask me to try and explain Aslan Karatsev as a tennis player. That's a hospital part of a question. It's not possible. His record last year is particularly inexplicable, David, given that he started the year by winning the title in Sydney, beating Andy Murray in the final, a match that Matt and I watched in Melbourne on the telly in our Airbnb, and he was astonishing that day, absolutely astonishing. It was Agassi-like, exactly as you say. Matt and I were marvelling at the level he produced. You know, Andy Murray was in great form that week, and it was a great opportunity for him, but there was nothing he could have done that day against Aslan Karatsev, and it felt like, oh, okay, Aslan Karatsev's doing his 2021 thing again, but let's all settle in for Aslan Karatsev being a thing. And then he just pretty much disappeared for reasons I'm not even going to try to explain, but here he is again, popping his head above the parapet and just being, looking like Andre Agassi and being completely nonchalant about it. You know, his whole vibe is, I went to toilet. You know, that's him, isn't it? You know, asking him to explain himself and him just sort of shrugging and going, what, I went to the toilet, what of it? I'm just doing me.
I won the tennis match. I played incredible tennis. Yeah, I mean,
I'm going to do that sometimes.
Sometimes it happens.
Yeah, I don't understand it, but my goodness me, he can look world-beating when he's on.
Yeah, he can. And actually, that's pretty much what I would have to say about what I saw from Jan-Lennard Struff tonight, Matt, because he beat Stefanos Tsitsipas despite losing the second set 7-5, which could break a lot of players, couldn't it? And yet, I don't know what his coach was saying. I don't speak German. But just in terms of body language, he was the most positive and upbeat man I've seen since I looked in the mirror last. And I mean, he was giving it large over to Struff, who I heard in the commentary is 33 years of age now, and he played lights out tennis on a clay court. Now, I know it's a quick one with altitude and everything else, but he's serving bombs. He's charging into the net. He was absolutely thrashing at his forehand. Didn't seem to matter what Tsitsipas gave him as a ball. Some of these balls were not attackable. He was attacking them.
Oh, it was great to watch. I was surprised and enthralled by this match. He sort of played a grass court match on a clay court, and I think Madrid helped him, the altitude, the fast-paced conditions sort of allowed him to do that. But he was coming into the net. He was, you know, taking the ball early. Midway through the third set, he just started hitting his backhand like Novak Djokovic, which helped him. And he just hit these incredible winners up the line.
Just a bit.
I just don't understand where that came from. It was extraordinary. And every time he was in trouble, you know, even just the sort of 30-all point, he just came up with a big serve or a really gutsy play, and he just kept coming and he just kept bringing it. And, you know, you sort of mentioned his player box. A very striking aspect of the match was the difference between the two player boxes and the energy coming out of them, as you said, so positive, so upbeat from Struff's team. But Tsitsipas, I feel for him actually on court. You know, his dad is talking all the time, and his mum sitting behind his dad, seemingly telling his dad off. It's really hard. And I know some of the analysis from the commentary I was listening to, and Daniela Handanova, for example, was sort of praising Tsitsipas for sort of how calm he was, and I totally understood that, but I did also think that he looked worn down by it and just flat. And I think that has been, you know, kind of what Tsitsipas has been in the last few months. I think a lot of it is, you know, injury related. He hasn't been feeling his best. He's not been able to play his best. This still wasn't peak Tsitsipas today. But that combination of the coaching setup, the injury, just all is not quite right in the Tsitsipas world. And Struff just pounced on him and just took advantage and exploited the areas of the game that we know that Tsitsipas still has to improve on, like the backhand. And yeah, it was a stunning performance. And I think, you know, logically you would think if anyone's going to stop Carlos Alcaraz, it would be, you know, the highest ranked player left on the other half, and it would be Tsitsipas, and, you know, with all his clay court pedigree. But actually I'm thinking Karatsev and Struff feel like much more dangerous players for Alcaraz with their big games than Tsitsipas at the moment, who we've seen Alcaraz, you know, he beat him just a week or so ago. And yeah, I think if we're looking for someone to beat Alcaraz, it might be Aslan Karatsev out of nowhere with his, you know, Andre Agassi taking the ball early, rendering the opponent meaningless game. Or it might be Jan-Lennard Struff with his sort of come at the net, come at you big game as well. And I think, you know, either of those would be quite intriguing matchups.
He looks exhausted, Tsitsipas, to me. Exhausted and jaded a little. Mm. And how could he not be? Everything that Matt said about, you know, what's going on, and if, you know, if that's how they are when the cameras are on, you know, that's the tiny little snapshot that we're getting. I mean, look, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but it feels like it might be chaos and tiring. And add the shoulder injury that he's managing into that, and I'm still not convinced that he's managing that optimally. Look, he knows his body better than I do, but it still seems to be a factor. I don't know how big a factor, but, you know, he keeps saying that I've got to play for ranking points and prize money and bonuses and sponsors and all of that. But every single tennis player is in that position when they get injured. And obviously it's horrible getting injured, but it is a fact of being a professional sports person. And, you know, it's a very short-termist outlook. To, you know, windows are small, you know, or they certainly can be small. You know, you've got all the time in the world until you don't. And I don't know. I feel for him. I feel for him. You know, part of me thinks, well, this is what he's doing with all of this going on. You know, he's still reaching quarterfinals with a shoulder injury and with seeming chaos behind the scenes and not playing his best tennis and all the rest of it. But then I think, gosh, imagine what he could be doing. And he's an interesting case study, at the moment, I think. I don't know what the immediate future holds for Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Mm. Yeah, the next month or so will be very interesting in his world.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. The order of play tomorrow looks fantastic, really, in terms of the doubles and the singles. It starts with Jessica Pegula and Coco Gauff up against Rusa and Kostyuk. Pegula and Gauff just keep on bringing it. They've got through to the semis, beating Luisa Stefani, so they must be in form. And her partner, Gabby Dabrowski, 10-5 in the third. Tell you. And then it's Alcaraz, Chorich. Anybody think there's going to be a surprise there at all?
No.
Okay. And then Struff and Karatsev. Is that going to be a repeat or a revenge?
I find this really fascinating because presumably they'll both watch that match that they played, 10 days or so ago, and Alcaraz will go, oh, that was good, past Aslan, do that again. And Jan Leonard will go, that wasn't great, was it? Let's do something different. But then does Aslan think, well, Jan Leonard's going to do something different, so maybe I need to anticipate the different thing he's going to do. And then I think, actually, scrap all of that. Like, they're both just going to do what got them here, right? You know, like, I'm not sure Jan Leonard's B game is... I don't know what Jan Leonard's B game looks like, quite frankly. But I think, basically, Karatsev is going to do his thing and hope to perform to the same level. Struff will do his thing and hope to perform better than he did in their previous match. So forget everything that I just said.
It's like taking a second penalty kick in the same game.
It is exactly that. Although, Matt, we're not talking about football. Move on quickly, David.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Football is trash.
Bad luck, Reading. Next year,
it's not luck,
you'll be
though,
back.
Is it? It's just horror.
Harry Kane missed his second penalty, didn't he, in the World Cup?
Yeah. Moving on from football, David.
So as I said, I say Karatsev will win. What do you two say?
I think Karatsev as well.
Yeah, because of that match they played in qualifying, honestly. Okay. If it was just on the basis of what I'd seen tonight, I would be really torn. But that was their only previous meeting, so I'll go with that, Karatsev.
Okay, all right, fine. And then the fourth match
after all, David.
Well, yeah. Fourth match of the day is actually Struff reminded me a bit of Sampras today. Oh, come on. This is going to be great. So the fourth match of the day tomorrow is Victoria Azarenka and Beatriz Haddad-Meyer against Taylor Townsend and Leila Fernandez.
That's going to be tomorrow night. That's a great doubles match, isn't it? Love that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait for that. And the one other doubles match that I haven't told, well, the two other doubles matches I haven't told you about in the men's draw, because they're at the semi-final stages as well. We've got...
I can tell you, David.
Go on.
I can tell you what the men's doubles final is going to be. It is Rohan Bopanna and Matt Ebden, who were inexplicably having sort of one of the best years of all time. They beat, who did they beat? I think they beat Santiago Gonzalez's partner.
Edouard Roger Vasselin.
They beat them today. So that was the Indian Wells champions beating the Miami champions. And Karen Khachanov and Andrei Rublev, who of course played in singles earlier this week, they have reached the men's doubles final together, and they beat Marcelo Arevalo and Jean-Julien Rojer. So it'll be Khachanov, Rublev against Bopanna and Ebden.
Well done. Good job. We got there. Thanks to you.
With apologies to Edouard Roger Vasselin.
Briefly forgotten at 12:45 in the morning in Madrid. Talking of Madrid just generally, we have been absolutely inundated by emails and messages on social media this week from listeners. Some shocked, all of them disgusted at Madrid's ball girl policy. And just one email received tonight from Rachel Ross says, I'm watching the Madrid tournament with mixed feelings. The tennis has been enthralling, but oh dear God, what's with the model ball girls? It's unbelievable, or maybe not, that this is all allowed to happen at tournaments, that this is still allowed to happen at tournaments, Madrid being a repeat offender. I don't really know where to start other than say this has been going on a long time, and it feels like it's getting worse, really, this year. Catherine, start by telling us what we're talking about and why it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, it was a long time ago now, wasn't it, that Madrid introduced what it thought was going to be a brilliant policy scheme, I don't know what you'd call it, to have models as ball girls, female models as ball girls on men's matches. And there was some backlash about that because, well, I would hope there would be some backlash about that. And there was. And their response to that was, don't worry, we'll employ male models to be ball boys on women's matches, which is the most pathetic understanding of sort of trying to correct sexism ever, for a number of reasons. I mean, that is not, objectifying men is not the answer to objectifying women, for starters. And also the two things are absolutely not equivalent. Men do not live in a world where it is a daily struggle to be taken seriously for anything other than your appearance. I'm not saying it's right for men to be objectified, certainly not in this type of forum. That's not the place for it at all. But the two things are absolutely not equivalent. That has been the case for some time, that models have been employed as ball girls and ball boys. This year, it seems to have attracted renewed attention because of the outfits that the model ball girls are being required to wear, which is short skirts, sort of, you know, fine, normal, you know, they're kind of tennis skirts and crop tops. And look, crop tops are very much in fashion. I realise that. All the kids are wearing crop tops. You go into a high street shop and It's really hard to find a top that doesn't seem like there is some material missing from it. And sort of in principle, I don't have a huge issue with that. It's that in combination with the employment of models, because you sort of the implication is that there's a certain body standard required to wear what's in fashion. And I think it just feeds into a total body negativity, body conformity narrative. The whole thing is just horrible and toxic and out of date, quite frankly. I really think that we as a society, not universally, but generally speaking, are moving on from this. And I just think it's, you know, I'm sure it's not a surprise to anybody how I feel about this, but trying to be objective about it, I think it's really naff and uncool. I really think that we've moved on and it just don't do it. Just don't do it. And if anybody thinks, oh, but they're employing male models as well, so it's all fine. If that is your understanding of trying to correct sexism and the patriarchy, then do better. Everybody just do better. And yeah, it does. My heart sinks a bit. I walk past them all the time. And they're all doing a cracking job. You know, it's absolutely nothing against them. But I have to walk past them sort of in their holding position when they're waiting to go on court to get to my presentation position. And my heart sinks every time I do. It makes me feel sad and uncomfortable. And I think we need to move on. I think it's not appropriate.
Well, Rachel was hoping that we might be able to produce a suitable rant to discuss this issue. Any notes, Matt, that you'd like to add?
No notes to Catherine's excellent speech there. I mean, as you said, it's a thing that has happened for years. I think it was introduced under the ownership of Jon Tyriac, wasn't it, in Madrid? And you know, you don't have to do much googling to find out whether he's a feminist or not. And I think there's an element this year as well where they're using these model ball girls only on the high profile men's matches, and then on other matches there are other ball kid teams in different attire, and you know, it just feels not at all empowering and completely objectifying, as though they're there to be looked at, as though they're there for show. And it is horrible, I think. And as Catherine said, it's so outdated. You know, F1 got rid of grid girls, didn't they, in what was it, 2018, I think? And you know, that seemed very, very late. And you know, walk-on girls in darts or in boxing, and tennis is still doing this. I just think it's awful, to be honest. So yeah, sorry, there were a few notes.
You did have notes.
Great notes.
They were great notes, Matt. I couldn't agree more. And listen, judging by all the correspondence we've been getting, we're not alone, and that at least is pleasing. Final note for today in today's show is a very sad one, and that is the news that Emma Raducanu is not going to play the French Open. She's not going to play Wimbledon. She may well not play the US Open. She may well not play again this year because she is currently recovering from a surgery, and there are a couple of more on the way as well. She wrote a handwritten diary note on her Instagram account yesterday in which she wrote, "Hey, it's safe to say that the last 10 months have been difficult as I dealt with a recurring injury in a bone on a bone of both hands. I tried my best to manage the situation, the pain, and get through it most of this year and the end of last year by reducing the play that she's been playing and missing parts of training as well, and cutting sessions short, but it hasn't been enough, she said. She admitted that she's been downplaying the issue and just trying to get through it, but she finally admitted defeat in that and decided to take the plunge and have this surgery. Simon Briggs in the Telegraph went on to put a bit more information on what we knew and said that that she's suffering from carpal bosses. I'm not sure exactly how to say that. He says they're bony growths on the back of the wrist, which would not be a problem for any ordinary citizen, but which can cause inflammation when combined with repetitive actions such as swinging rackets or golf clubs. Surgery for this condition is reasonably simple, simply involves shaving down or cutting out the offending bump. While any operation is best avoided, this sounds like a more positive diagnosis than out-and-out tendonitis, which can be extremely difficult to treat. So it sounds as though, you know, hopefully there's a good prognosis for the future. She's also going to have an ankle procedure over the next few weeks as well. I mean, I think my first reaction is, on a physical level, I'm relieved that she's just taking decisive action to try to get her issues sorted out once and for all, because it's been really depressing the last 18 months seeing her try to play, show what she's capable of in bits and fits and starts, and then not be able to anymore. But then there's another level, I think, Catherine, in which, having heard her interview, her very short, very awkward interview that she gave at the start of this tournament, in which, frankly, when I heard it and I actually heard the audio file, frankly, she sounded plain rude in her answers to me at the time. But this tells me that there was a lot more to her reactions at that point, and I think just generally she sounds like she's been struggling struggling with these injuries, struggling with everything. And well, I feel for her. I hope she gets better soon and feels happy and the sort of person that I'm sure she's capable of being as a tennis player in the future.
Yeah, I had the same. I heard the audio same as you did, and I felt uncomfortable with. I mean, there's no other word for it. She did come across rudely, but you know, my reaction to that was, she's not okay. You know, that wasn't the sound of a young woman that's okay, and I was really worried about her upon hearing that. And you know, see previous discussion about Stefanos Tsitsipas for the pressure that players are under to, if it's not clear cut with an injury as to whether you can play, you know, if it's an injury you are able to play with, there is pressure as an athlete to continue playing for, you know, whatever it might be, for sponsors, for ranking points, for prize money, for bonus money, for you know, you might be supporting your family, whatever it might be, there is pressure. And I think it can be very hard to see the wood for the trees. And I think this is quite a brave decision from Emma Raducanu, given all that. And I felt quite a lot of, as sad as I am, you know, to see her in her hospital bed, we had already been privy to sort of hearing that audio and knowing that she wasn't okay, that something quite serious was up. And it was almost a relief to me to find out what it was. And as you say, David, that she's taken decisive action about it. And while I'll really miss her on the tour, because I just love watching her play tennis, I really, really do. And I didn't know that about her when she won the US Open, because I hadn't watched her play live. I've learnt that since her winning the US Open. I really love her tennis, and I will miss it. But I really think both for her and for us as fans of hers, this is short-term pain for long-term gain. And the thought of, I don't know, I'm already picturing us in Melbourne, start of 2024, and looking forward to her coming back and seeing her for the first time afresh. And I'm willing to take the hit now because it's all about me, Emma. I'm willing to take the hit now and over the next few months for the prospect of that and a longer term future.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said. Okay, well, I think it's high time Catherine Whittaker got some sleep because it's going to be another big day in Madrid tomorrow. Matt is going to be up late editing this. Are you looking forward to that, Matt? Don't answer that.
Well, I guess the listeners won't know this because it would have been edited, but very few stumbles from us today, so all good. Oh.
Okay, great. All right, okay. Well, I will end by reminding you that my mascot is Maisie. Catherine's mascot is Xenia. Matt's is the lovely Darwin. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, as always, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. We couldn't do this without you. We'll save our shout-outs and our episode mascots for Monday, because I think we're all a bit whacked out. So we're going to go and have a rest. And we'll be back with another tennis podcast at the conclusion of Madrid. I think we're in for a good few days.
No one wants a tired shout out, do they? We'd be doing them a disservice.
We would get emails.
We would. We would get emails.
We get emails anyway.
We do. We love your emails. Most of them. Good night, folks.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.